Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for Monkey Tennis comes from Rawlingsons, your one-stop shop for confectionery of all kinds. We're known across the Norfolk area for our extensive range of chocolate oranges in all styles, sizes, and conditions. We really must say this again, chocolate oranges are available at Rawlingsons.
Monkey Tennis. Monkey Tennis. Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey Tennis.
Not my face, I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey Tennis. Monkey Tennis.
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the...
Hello! This week we're looking at Basic Alan, episode 4. The VHS cassette of Iron Man and Partridge describes it like this. Refurbishment at the Linton Travel Tavern leaves Alan as the only guest. To while away the hours, he tries out a relaxation tape, takes a gentle stroll along the M11's dual carriageway, and gets to grips with the workings of a Corby trouser press. I'm Adam Brooks, also here today, Tom Dark.
Fight you.
Nick Older.
About the scumbags.
And Tom Stab.
I was going to say fight you, and no, I can't think of anything. Hello.
Please do prepare your intros. So I think this is a great episode because nothing happens, but they've still made a half hour of comedy gold out of it.
We haven't really ranked the episodes, have we? We've kind of said, oh, you know, certain episodes have been our favourite, but we've never said where they actually sit in terms of a series ranking. Is that something to say?
We're all very keen on episode 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely, Jill.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that I think this episode is great, but it's almost... Because it's very focused around the hotel.
Yeah, so it's a triumph of comedy performance rather than plot. Because literally nothing happens, does it? At the end of this episode, everyone is roughly in the same position they were at the start. Alan's a little more angry at Lynn.
That's kind of true. That's kind of the series, though. Nothing. You get to the end.
There's been two deaths by the end, man.
But it's basically a cycle of failure.
Yep, absolutely.
Alan in a nutshell.
Yep. Classic
so,
Alan.
Opening again in Radio Norwich, where he is talking about the biggest stadium band in the world, REO Speedwagon.
Were they, though?
No. I don't know. Were they? Has anyone checked the sales on REO Speedwagon?
No, but actually, that reminds me. Nick was questioning the validity of Deacon Blue a few weeks ago, because a guy was wearing a t-shirt in the Pear Tree Productions office.
I should stress, I really like Deacon Blue. I should stress that.
Can I shock you?
Yeah. Take a guess, how many, again, according to Wikipedia, so thanks to the internet, how many albums do you think Deacon Blue have sold?
10 million.
But they were peak peak fame in the 80s?
No, was early to mid 90s.
Okay, so people were still buying records.
Yes.
12 million.
4.5.
The answer is 6. Anyway, the point still stands, Nick, that it was fine for him to be wearing a Deacon Blue t-shirt. They were
more than acceptable.
No, but the point I was making was that he's wearing a Deacon Blue t-shirt and that he's a relatively young man. And this was, what, 96, 97? Deacon Blue had not been a thing for a long time.
Who would, in 2016, what would the equivalent band be? Is it like someone wearing like a Travis t-shirt?
Yeah, it would be like someone wearing a Travis t-shirt now and being taken seriously.
I don't
know. Although they have got a new album out. I saw some cheap advertising.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Don't give them free advertising.
Sorry, we'll cut that.
I think we haven't got an album out.
Never heard of it. We've got sidetracked.
So yeah, Alan's trying to literally fill time on his radio show by describing all the different ways you can
like
say
us.
10 to 5. including a bit where he's trying to work out how to say 1,230 to 12. And the bit I love about that is that he puts his hand up as if the audience can see him and he's scoring for time. So he's like, oh. Bear with me.
Yep.
And then he introduces his new comedy character, Camp David.
Who I think I looked up the words. Camp David has three words. That's
it's one of them mints.
Yeah, one of them's mints. One of them's,
oh, hello, Alan.
I think he's got five words.
Oh, okay. It depends if you count.
I think
in the Alan lexicon, I think that counts.
Yeah,
as a word.
I think, to quote the man himself, that was just a noise. But up to you.
And does anyone have mints for breakfast?
No.
What do you want for breakfast this morning?
For the purposes of a mildly homophobic radio sketch.
Yeah, it's a bit close to the bone, isn't it?
It's not very PC radio, is it?
No. I think that this episode and the next one, Alan definitely ramps up the offensiveness. Because one question I was thinking about is Alan racist? And I think that he is, in a kind of
will buy the Daily Mail.
Yeah,
kind of
it's born out of ignorance rather than a genuine
hatred. I don't think he's an active racist.
I just think he's
an ignorant racist.
Yeah, and this is one of the episodes where that sparks up a little homophobia as well.
Although, doesn't he chastise Michael for being a racist? So.
Yeah, he just
calls him a daft racist.
There are definitely some worse racists in this series, and most of them show their true colours in the final episode, but we'll get on.
That's a very good point.
So Camp David is a segment that Alan's obviously spent ages on, and it lasts 10 seconds. Also, it becomes very apparent that he's extremely desperate for callers. He's basically begging for them, which is something I can sympathise with, because I realised this on the way here today, I once hosted Alan Slot on a local radio show in Cardiff. Where
so you had the graveyard.
It was even worse than his, because I was 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. I didn't even get to go till 7, and then the equivalent of Dave Clifton would come in and relieve me of my duties. But
you paid for this. This sounds terrible.
Yeah, but not much. Also, and also, I turned up on the first shift, and they told me I wouldn't have a producer, and so it was just me, a copy of The Sun, and a can of Little Red Bull to create 5 hours of scintillating radio. And I was desperate for callers, because only drunks and truck drivers ring in at that time of night.
You were desperate. That sounds like exactly the kind of people you want ringing into a show.
You'd think, but then the same woman would call up 5 minutes before the show each week demanding Ecuador by Sash. And then she'd just
and
keep
by
ringing
God,
back.
You gave it to her.
Great taste. Great
I refused
taste.
To play it just out of fun. So at that point, we cut through to reception, where Alan is, of course, singing, as he often does, with the calamitous addition of Susan's voice this time, who he describes, quite rightly, I think, as sounding like a trapped boy. She is rubbish.
She is terrible.
If you knew you had a voice like that, would you air it?
Probably not. No. But
at this point, she's just doing what she can to get by with Alan as a guest.
I was going to say, it probably she's on reception and she sees Alan walking through the doors and she must think, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I've got to listen to him prattle on to me and he's singing.
She calls his bluff at this point, but also it's around this time that she says, Adam, why don't you go and talk to somebody else? Which I think marks a crucial turning point, in that it's the first time I think she gives up on the sort of, yeah, I'm a professional in a hotel setting and... Yeah. Just gets real.
Their professionalism goes downhill massively from this point onwards. They just cannot be bothered to deal with Alan at all or indulge him.
Are you surprised by that, though? I mean, again, yeah. how many weeks do we think he's been at the hotel by this point? Adam, were you keeping tabs on this?
I am. There's no firm information at this point, but taking it as being roughly equidistant between episode 2 and 6, that would put it at about 18, 19 weeks.
Can we fact check that, because our maths has proved inconsistent so far?
No, it's fine. Let's just assume it's fine.
It's fine.
But his interaction with Susan in this scene is the typical thing about the compliment and then taking it away again. And then also you have what what we see Susan do a few times in this series is be slightly flirtatious with him just to freak him out, because she says, I don't just want to kiss, I want to go the whole way. And he just looks really uncomfortable and doesn't know what to do.
What's she trying to get out of that exchange?
I think she's just trying to embarrass him, because I think it's entertainment for her.
It's right. Dangerous, though. What if he's like...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's what I was going
to
say.
And I think she's just trying anything she can to make him leave, isn't she?
Yeah, but I'm saying it's a risky strategy, because if he does go...
Because Alan's a sex pest.
She's putting herself out there, and who knows what Alan's going to say.
In previous episodes, Alan's kind of, lecht at her a little bit, so, It could have happened.
And he's, he's tried it on, him and Jill, obviously, as well. He was successful
and
there.
And she's got a fiancé.
She has. It does emerge in a later episode that she's engaged. So maybe she just loves playing a dangerous game there, Susan. That's basically the start of Susan ramping up the dislike of Alan to the point that in two episodes' time, she is beating his face openly. We'll come on to that. It's also around the point that Sophie tries to book him in for Christmas dinner in May. and he's appalled, but then goes along with it anyway, so that's fine.
One thing I wanted to know is that obviously Susan says that they're going to do some work up. They're doing some work on the hotel. Does anyone notice any difference to the hotel post this episode?
It's no.
Exactly the same.
They've done nothing.
What work are they doing?
Another question. If they are doing renovation on the work and he's the only guest, why is the full staff still working there all weekend? Like, what are Sophie and Ben doing and Michael doing?
Again, what we're doing, we're finding more continuity / realism errors, which might not be worth going into too far.
I'm keen to explore it. I'd like to know what the hell they are doing.
They're receptionists and they're there to tend to guests, and there's one guest.
Absolutely.
In this scene as well, you have him doing the mime for Michael to wash his car. Now, how many people that work in a hotel would wash your car for you? Is that part of Michael's job?
One, and his name is Michael.
Yeah, but absolutely. Is that part of Michael's job, or is that because him and Alan are kind of, they have this weird friendship?
If they've got the weird friendship. Yeah. I don't think there's many people that will wash your car as part of a hotel service.
Especially a travel talent.
Yeah, at the market that they're pitching at. Maybe if you were
Alan might be paying him for it, you don't know.
He's not paying him, is he?
I doubt that very much.
He's not, is he? I'm just trying to, anyway.
It wasn't
they're
even
not.
A please, it was just... Wash my car.
Hi.
Hi. I'm going to wash your car.
Yeah, because he's already. Yeah, so that suggests that he's already either done it before or previously agreed to it and is just willing to do whatever he can to.
Yeah, basically, Alan's just gone up to him and go, Michael, can you wash my car? Okay.
In fact,
but it comes across to me though that they have an arrangement about this, that Michael should have done it already.
Yeah.
And this is a scene as well where he basically applies his pressure on every member of the staff, and he rounds it off. He's already done Susan, done Michael, rounds it off by then ruining Sophie and Ben's potential fun by demanding a hot egg, demanding a crescent of Chris, demanding cooked meat, basically just piling things onto the menu that Ben can only cook in.
So maybe that's why they're there. They just want to bonk all day.
On the payroll.
Yeah.
Oh, also, just a quick travel tavern thing. I think last week we were trying to work out whether this was a standalone establishment or a chain. According to the book, there's 22 of them, so that makes it roughly Jury's Inn size.
have you fact checked that?
I have actually.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay, great.
Good. I like to make sure
about
that we're factually correct
about time we did
at all times.
Checking.
Talking of Linton Travel Tavern, we had a genuine email from a genuine person. I'm going to go to Tom Stab for said communication.
Hi, Tom. So we got we got a genuine email from a genuine person called Danny Stillwell. Hello, Danny. Thanks for getting in touch. He said, really enjoyed the first episode. Little known fact about the Linton Travel Tavern. It was actually all filmed at the Watford Hilton. So he said he used to work at the Stansted Hilton, and one of the employees came down from Watford and he worked there whilst the series was being filmed.
That is a good fact punch. I did not know that.
So if you ever stay in the Watford Hilton, just know you are staying in a little bit of Partridge history.
Mm-hmm. Or like a bloody tramp in a lay-by. Depending how you look at it. We're up in the room now where Alan, I think, is trying to relax with one of his own tapes.
Relaxing to his own voice, or, well, very much failing to relax to his own voice.
Well, it's a terrible tape, isn't it? That's the point as well. Like, it basically is just a wind-up on tape. And so Alan's then moving his shoes around. It eventually turns off his own tape and says, sod off to it, which is not the first time he's lost an argument with himself.
He mentions trunks that are made out of bark. That conjures up a bit of an image for one, but
who has trunks that are made of bark?
That sounds horrendously stressful as well.
I never thought Alan would indulge something as a relaxation tape.
Well, also this is, it's welcome to tape 2 of Let Go. So
there was a first, it was so successful.
Remember the breathing exercises from tape 1.
Exactly. Please relax, I can't emphasise that enough.
Yeah. He dropped some massive tech in here as well, such as an access card, remember going, and a pager, also moribund.
What's an access card?
Access is basically like what was Switch. It was like access in Switch.
It's
now
like, it's like old man's Visa.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Dark will remember
old
it.
Man
Visa. When he was spending it in Foster's Mansworth.
Never going to let it go, just because I've got a better memory than you.
Longer memory. Yeah. Older memory.
Might be starting to fail him soon.
So at this point, Alan calls Fernando, his son, obviously named after another ABBA classic, and has a little chat to him. He believes that he's... Fernando's 22 at this point and apparently wasting his life by spending a Saturday in bed with a woman.
Yep.
I noticed as well, obviously he's got a daughter who he doesn't call. There's a bit later on where he eventually gets a photo of his daughter back from his ex-wife, Carol.
Yeah.
I do think it was a bit odd. This is jumping ahead a little bit, but he's managed to procure a frame photo of Jet from Gladiators and a photo of Roger Moore.
Yep.
But the photo of his daughter, he hasn't bothered to pick up.
To be fair though, it does say that Carol's been holding that all back. It's not Alan. He's been trying.
That's true.
It's Carol. And the narcissistic sports pimp lover.
Presumably hoarding pictures of his daughter Denise under a bed somewhere.
Whilst taking a deep bath at Alan's expense.
Also, there's a few hints, not so much in this episode, but in other Alan materials, that Fernando is the favourite. Namely that in the autobiography, his son is named, but it just says he has a son, Fernando, and also a daughter.
I was just thinking that. I don't think we know what his daughter's name is or anything.
Oh, no, it's
we?
Denise. But that only comes up at the end of this series.
Right.
He certainly doesn't call her when he's bored. He's not that bored.
Yeah, no. Fernando is
He'd rather attempt to have a drink with his son, the person in Curry's, and...
Or the BP...
Or the BP garage man.
We'll come to that in a bit. There are some more programme ideas coming up in his hotel room in this episode.
Oh, yep.
Yachting mishaps. Some funny, some tragic.
That sounds like something that would get genuinely commissioned.
That probably exists on Channel 5,
I'm
I would
have a
imagine.
Quick look.
Okay. And also, you have idea for a programme, Free Spirits, Change Up to Bad Attitudes. Because again, it's the thing where Alan basically, he doesn't seem to like young people or young people having fun.
Exactly.
That seems to annoy him quite a lot.
So yeah, he spots Sophie and Ben outside and decides to... No, that's right. They've eventually gone around to their liaison after making him a hot egg and a crescent of
crisps. Yeah, I don't think... He spies on them, basically. He doesn't spot them. He kind of...
Well, he looks... Quite frankly, he looks disgusted with them.
With their fun.
Young people are having fun.
Yeah.
Another note about this scene is that... did anyone else spot that he knows Curry's number off by heart?
I'm not surprised by that.
No, I'm not either. No. And then obviously chastises the chap at Curry's for not having a basic grasp of Latin. And at that point, even he doesn't seem to believe that that's true. Yeah.
Have you also... He's not brand loyal when it comes to his electronic shops either. So you have him phoning Curry's here. You've got the mention to Dixon's in previous episodes.
Yeah.
And also, does anyone remember? I think it might have been a comic relief sketch where he does the visit to Tandy's.
And also Tandy's. The brand of hi-fi that he buys in the last episode of the series.
Yeah. Bang on some.
And he gets it from a particularly named shop, but we should save that for the episode because there are some good facts around that as well. So
stick with us.
Stay tuned.
Also, I think it's around this point that he names all the wild places that he ever had sex with Carol. Does anybody remember what they are?
Oh, the bed.
One is a lounge. The lounge.
The hall.
One is the hall, and the other one is behind a large boulder.
And that's where they conceived Fernando, I
believe. That's right, yeah. And then they go into the whole thing about... Yeah, we were delighted. We grew to like you. So following this, he's tried his relaxation tape, he's tried speaking to his son and taking the man from Curry's for a pint. None of them are interested. In fact, Fernando hangs up on him while he's talking about the space technology used in hip flasks. No, used in like soup flasks. So he's off down the BP garage to buy 12 bottles of windscreen washer fluid.
It's never really explained why. I mean, obviously he's just killing time and he's... But there's no real reason as to why he's buying that many.
Well, I guess he needed some, so why not buy in bulk?
I guess so.
I suppose. Obviously singing Goldfinger as he goes, another Bond reference which gets explored more in series two. Another thing, obviously, is that he's visiting a BP garage and tries to get the chap behind the counter to go for a drink with him.
Now, I've got a fact about this. I don't know if anybody else.
Bring it on.
So you don't see the man in the BP garage, but you hear him.
Ooh.
And that voiceover is provided by the actor that plays Michael.
Shut up.
Is it?
Did you genuinely not know this?
No. I didn't know.
No. Oh, okay. No. Again, some widely available information on the internet. So, because obviously the thing is, what people also may not realise, that the actor that plays Michael, his name escapes
me, is not a Geordie.
He's not a real Geordie.
Oh. He's very well spoken.
He has a very, very well spoken English man.
Doesn't he do Compare the Market?
He's done lots of other things.
He does the makeup.
Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah.
Another fact, though, while you're thinking of it. Another fact, something I thought about from this BP Garage thing. Obviously, we know that Michael goes on to work in a BP Garage in the second series. Does that mean that Michael got sacked from the Travel Tavern and literally went to work in the nearest building? Presumably.
That's what I was thinking. Is this the same BP Garage that features in series two? I reckon it is.
Probably.
Yeah.
But maybe Alan's put in a good word. With the management team there, which presumably he's on first name terms with. Mm-hmm. Also, this is before the heady days of the Wild Bean Cafe. This is just branded BP Express Shop.
Wow.
It's the second mention of Wild Bean Cafe from you.
Nick's on a retainer.
He's a big fan.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that I wrote my notes when I'd had a beer or two, because I've written, I can envisage my dad walking along a hot shoulder singing Goldfinger. Which is not true at all. He'd never do it. I don't know why I've written that.
You've gone insane.
Yeah, he's not a big Bond fan, is he?
No. It's around this point as well that we get our kind of our first proper glimpse into Michael's problems. We know that he's obviously seen some shit from Alan explaining things to the police officer when they get caught for traffic
going
theft.
Men on fire going, oh.
But it's the first time you actually see Michael in the car park really having trouble just going about his day. And perhaps, I guess, around this point, Partridge takes a little bit of a turn for the darker over this episode and the next one.
He's a troubled man. Like, deep down, there's some...
Michael or Alan?
Which one are you talking about?
Different troubles, but different
but
men.
Both very... different men, different needs.
And then comes the dismantling of the Corby Trouser Press, which is another pivotal Partridge moment.
And I would argue that Trouser Presses are probably more famous from being in the Alan Partridge episode than actual people using Trouser Press. Like,
I've never used a Trouser
group,
Press.
Has anyone ever used a Corby Trouser Press?
No.
Do they even exist in this day and age?
They do.
There was a chap who is, I think he's a kind of super chef of sorts, and he released a guide to meals you can make with just the stuff lying around hotel rooms, how to boil an egg in your kettle and that sort of thing.
A super chef?
Yeah. I think boiling an egg in a kettle from a super chef. He put together some pretty good meals, and I think there might have been there might have been some that required grilling ingredients in a Corby Trouser Press.
Take the bag of crisps,
cheese sandwich.
Open it.
You guys are going to have egg on your face when you look this up, because it is a big deal.
My egg's boiled, mate.
It made way.
I put it in the kettle.
3 minutes to go, and it's ready.
I'll move the conversation on. This has just occurred to me. I've not written this down. This is not a premeditated.
Going rogue.
It's a live.
I'm going
rogue.
I'm going off script. So my
script.
Well, we don't okay.
Have, a script. Have you got a script?
We're not TOWIE.
One of my friends from school basically had a Corby Trouser Press in his parents' bedroom. Who has that?
What? Just wired up, ready to go.
This is true. Absolutely true.
But I thought they just existed in hotels because maybe irons weren't available or something.
It's only the appliance the iron wishes
because
it could have been.
It's a specific technique to get your trousers nice and, you know, pressed.
Pressed.
I believe pressed is the word.
Pressed. Oh, dear.
They cost just having a quick look. Oh. They cost £140 from John Lewis.
I bet you they cost more in the 90s. Their price must have plummeted.
The surprise there is not the price, it's that they're available from John Lewis.
And they have
2016, man.
A 4.5-star review from 7 reviews. There you go.
Any choice cuts from the review?
This will take a minute for me to look up.
Someone's just written important asset.
See, I would be looking for some kind of comedy Alan Partridge-based review.
That's exactly
well, it does have
for.
The age of all the reviewers, and none of them are under 45, and most of them are over 65.
They probably all remember Foster's Menswear as well. Then. whilst Tom is looking at things on the internet, I can drop a little fact punch in here that this episode is Peter Bainham's favourite episode.
Oh, really?
So that's something that I gained from listening to the commentary.
I do think when they came up with this, it must have taken some supreme confidence in the series to say, we're going to do a half hour of comedy television on BBC Two that is about a man achieving nothing over a weekend. Like, that's pretty bold. When you think about how hard it is to get things commissioned from what you hear, that's
but I wonder. I wonder if kind of back in the day, though, I guess, was it easier to get stuff commissioned, or maybe it was harder? I guess you had fewer channels, but more people were watching.
And you had more cash.
And you had hard-nosed commissioners like Tony Hayes as well.
But so do remember, the role of a commissioner is basically to put a tick or a cross in a box.
Not everyone.
He's
can
not
do
wrong.
It, not everyone can do it.
Nope. So Alan's in the car at this point, pitching ideas on the phone to Lynn. His the main idea being around the world with Alan Partridge in a bulldozer on the left, which he claims is his worst idea. Do you think it's his worst idea?
It's exactly what I was going to say. He kind of apologises to Lynn, which is surprising for one, but it's not that bad an idea. It's fully formed. It sounds like something the BBC would actually show. So yeah, I'm surprised that he actually retracts it and says that it's a bad idea. I'd say it's pretty good. I'd watch it.
Title needs a bit of work though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not the snappiest, no.
So Alan's driving in his car, and quite clearly displayed is the number plate of that car. So I went onto webuyanycar.com and put in that number plate and did some rudimentary guesswork on how many miles it's done, how many owners, etc. How much do you reckon that car is worth now? Because it did give me an answer.
So I guess for context, we were talking about a Rover Metro in the first series.
I would ignore that.
Can I ask a supplementary question?
You can.
Do you believe, having seen the price, that some sort of premium has been attached because it was a car in Alan Partridge?
100% not.
Okay. I'm going to say £750 at this point.
I'm going to say £550.
£200.
Okay, well, Tom Dark is the winner, but apparently, according to WeBuyAnyCar.com, that car is now worth £50.
What? Lynn's age.
So, hang on, the genuine car that features?
Yeah, so you can put in the reg number.
Can we just club together and get that?
We could.
It might not be for sale.
I don't think it's for sale. I think it just gives you an estimate on how much that car is worth based on. I mean, I've taken a best guess estimate on what the mileage would be and how many owners it's had, etc. And it said it'd be worth £50.
Does it still have any tungsten tip screws left in it?
And what are they for?
No, because he's used them, hasn't he? Even though he said he was never going to use them, he's used them for his...
Very good. Yeah. I had this in my notes. Yep, so he says to Lynn, never going to use them. And then later on in the episode, he uses them as part of his infamous zombie costume.
He does. So then he calls Lynn to the car park. I don't know why they're chatting in the car rather than in the full hotel.
Just seems like the sort of thing Alan would do though, doesn't it?
He does.
He loves the car.
She's been caught in a breakdown and is boiling hot, but he's the one that gets the hand fan.
He's walked the final couple of miles to get there. And Alan's like, can you
call me down with the hand fan?
Which he obliges.
Did you know there is a longer version of this scene that actually continues for about 20 minutes? So on the DVDs, you can watch that as a whole scene.
Oh, really? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Did they pick the best bit for the episode? Or?
I mean, I think they, you know, they had to condense it down quite a bit. But you just got Alan and Lynn in a car for about 20 minutes just
talking.
Again, just it's quite boring conversation because that's kind of the theme of the whole episode.
He does have a good old chat about the possibility of a car crash and the usefulness of seatbelts, which I like because it comes up. It gives probably the best noise he makes all season, I think, when he tries to simulate a car crash and he's just going...
I thought you'd go, boosh, boosh.
Oh, yeah, he's got a little boosh in there as well. And I guess that probably that they call back to that later on when Lynn gets minor women's whiplash in the next series.
Oh, yes. Nice tease there.
Yeah.
Imagine if we got a second series.
Oh, imagine that.
Come on, Tony. Please.
Yeah, we're not having that meeting for a couple of weeks yet, so we'll have to see.
So then Lynn and Alan are back in the tavern, and it becomes very obvious that the staff are very fond of Lynn.
They can see what's going on. She's downtrodden. Alan's using her.
Yeah.
And they're keen to kind of show her a good time and invite her to join their game.
But has anyone noticed that? I only noticed this last night rewatching it again.
I think I might have done, yes.
Is that they're just sitting around getting pissed during the day. There's wine there, wine, three glasses.
I would assume
not very professional. Anyone could walk up at any point.
With the refurbishment going on and you don't see, particularly this episode, I don't think you see any other guests in the hotel. Is Alan the only guest in the hotel?
Yeah, they say that.
Is the hotel closed?
Well,
because anyone could walk up at any point and they're just sitting around playing cards and getting hammered.
I think it's closed apart from they've just said, oh, Alan, you can just stay here because they don't really care about
him. It's probably that they technically have to be there because Alan's a guest, but they know that he's gone out and so it's drinking time.
I guess so. Keen to see an orc chart because someone should be responsible for that.
So Lynn's playing gin rummy with them and they're having a little laugh at Alan's expense, but he's not completely gone. He just pretended he was going to do some filing, but there's no files in his bag. And then he does the brilliant
point.
Bag swing and then crisps throwing on the floor. The crisps on the floor, man. That's so good. It's my favourite.
And the hesitation as well. He kind of goes,
he's not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to throw it.
Also, probably an error, I guess. I noticed on a close-up of a screen grab of this bit of the episode that Lynn is holding her cards facing out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so nice.
She was not destined to win that game of gin rummy because everyone can see her cards except her.
More continuity bombshells.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so she runs up to make amends with a mint, but she's not allowed one, obviously.
I love what he says to Lynn here.
It's so good.
I don't think you should have one,
considering what's happened.
Yeah, and so basically, good. Lynn's there to take the flack for everyone being, you know, obviously a bit mean to Alan. Only a little bit, and you could probably argue he's had it coming for quite a while.
Yeah, and the passive aggressiveness is off the charts with him replaying his dictaphone message about sacking Lynn.
Thinking about it, because it's the staff taking the piss out of him. Lynn, although she's sitting with them being jovial, she's not mocking him.
Yeah, but she's the only one he can be openly hostile to in that way.
Exactly, she's the easy target, and she cops for it again.
But he could complain to head office and probably get some form of compensation for that.
22 hotels.
Yeah.
And they've thrown a telling moment in as well, where obviously he's talking about sacking Lynn for being unloyal, disloyal, fun that excuse her employer. And then obviously it moves straight on to the fact that he needs her to ring Bill Oddie.
Bill Oddie.
Which is this episode, I believe, is Bill Oddie reference.
Four episodes in, four references down.
One reference per episode. And I think looking at the scripts of this, it's you have a moment where you almost feel sorry for him. He's like, Lynn, they were doing impressions of me. You think, oh, he's being a bit bullied. And then he just starts being really harsh to Lynn. Like, oh, shall I sit there? Shall I sit there? I'm like a little mouse.
And she does that impression.
And then you feel sorry for Lynn. Yeah. Yeah.
And she does the impression they were doing of her, which is basically a glimpse of reality.
Yes.
And, shall I let you walk all over me? Sorry, mother, I can't get you out of the bath. I've got to pop down to Linton Travel Tavern to sort out Alan's problems.
Which is very funny, but that's a bit silly, isn't it? There's no way Alan would listen to that and not realise that it's a comment on how he treats her.
I think you're giving him too much credit.
I think he's a bit of a rotten shit to it. I think ignorance is a key factor with Alan here. So I think he's not going to realise.
That is true. But again, this is another little sting of seriousness in this episode. We've got Michael's issues. You've got Lynn's bitterness. Like, things are sort of, it's perhaps less out and out comedy than previous episodes in parts of this one. Alan then pre-warns everyone of his zombie joke, because everyone knows the funniest kinds of jokes are the ones you've warned everyone to look out for.
Warning, I'm about to be funny.
Yeah. Also, this sort of represents the only time that he is trying to be the playful one. You know, I can imagine Alan's mind, he's like, everyone's just having a bit of a kick about, I'm going to join in.
But I'll go too far with it.
Yeah, exactly. But has he gone too far?
It's very bizarre. I think I'm a bit bored. I'm just going to dress up as a zombie.
We've all been there. I think Susan's reaction was way over the top. I think he was within his rights.
I think he's gone too far because he's taken a shower curtain to use as a cape. He's got biscuits on his face.
He made sure all the rings were intact, though. So he put it back on.
So it's fine. He hasn't damaged the property.
I think if you're in a
hotel, use the tongues and tip screws.
No, when I say a bit too far, it's just a bit weird.
It is a bit weird, I'll give you that. But in a situation where all the people who are supposed to be looking after you are getting drunk and making jokes at your expense with your friends, I think you've got the right to pop behind reception dressed up as a zombie and scare the crap out of them.
And especially there's no other guests as well.
Yeah.
Not like they're going to confuse him for a member of staff.
Or a real-life zombie.
Yeah.
A type of zombie.
I do love the bit where Michael takes that very seriously, though. Michael's suddenly straight into
raised fist as well. He literally goes in raised fist, ready to punch someone.
He's into combat mode, isn't he?
Yeah. But it could have been a man. It probably could have been a woman. Either way, someone was getting punched.
I'm more or less on Alan's side through this whole encounter, especially the bit where Ben gets it wrong about Frankenstein being a type of zombie and Alan basically corrects him.
Yeah,
Alan's a pedant, but Ben is a know-it-all.
Absolutely.
I would take Alan over Ben any day.
So after that scene, we are then at the hotel bar. Alan and Michael sharing... Well, Alan's drinking a pint, Michael is serving. And then you have this point where they're referencing depression and suicide. So it's a very, very cheery moment to begin with. But that's why I think this is producer Jed's favourite episode, quite possibly.
Yep. It's also, in a very indirect way, this is probably the most brutal slating that Alan ever gets from Michael. Bearing in mind that obviously Michael is very subservient to Alan, when they're talking about suicide and it becomes apparent Michael's saying, oh yeah, I've thought about it, you know, for you, Alan, not for me. And, yeah. And then Alan's like, oh no, I meant for you. And then Michael's like, oh no, that's the coward's way out. Like, that's as harsh as it ever gets in terms of Michael slating Alan. Also in this scene is one of my favourite bits of Michael chat in the whole series, where he recounts the tale of the time that a monkey ate all his fags and threw it into the sea.
But it bounced off a rock first. Oh,
that is perfect comic timing when he's talking about bouncing off a rock.
Yeah.
I also just the way he's like, I just hide it in the sea.
He'd eaten all me fags.
And an extra fact that I can add to this, acquired from the commentary, Michael improvised the eating the fags line. So that was, he dropped that in.
Well, brilliant.
Genius.
Absolutely. What a pro.
Yep.
You've got some IMDb facts about Michael as well, is that right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, just looking at Michael's IMDb, because that's all we really do, Wikipedia, IMDb, and DVD commentaries. So, I mean, you could make this podcast up yourself, really, and not have to listen to us, but...
I mean, we've done it now, so, you know.
Yeah.
Michael, aka Simon Greenall, has been in One Foot in the Grave, Soldier...
I don't believe it! Hey! That was brilliant. That was really,
we
really
good. Didn't even realize that.
I know it's hard to believe, but that was not planned.
Terrible. 4291.
He's also been in Soldier Soldier, Harry Enfield, a voiceover on the Tomb Raider video game, The Bill 3 times. Holby City and Doc Martin, so he's really done some of the classic British TV shows there.
No Casualty, no Poirot.
No Casualty, but The Bill 3 times, I think we'll give him that.
Mm.
A voiceover in Modern Toss, some episodes of Lead Balloon, the Jack D sitcom. Also listed the Charlotte Church show, which confuses me a bit. I'm not sure what
cancelled after
in
one series.
Did he play Glenn Ponder?
Possibly. I actually know the guy that was the band leader for the Charlotte Church show.
Wasn't the name drop.
Clang. Langer.
Yeah, it's not that good, is it? He was in Saxondale, W1A, Shaun the Sheep, and Hoff the Record. That's the David Hasselhoff thing.
Hoff the Record?
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's actually very funny, and I recommend
it. Is that just a title that they got and then worked backwards?
Yeah, start with the title, work backwards. Yeah. That's how Alan comes up with all his show ideas. Yeah. So,
it's just Hoff going around on a record going, oh no. No, it is good.
So, Michael, real name, Simon Greenall, and not a real Geordie.
So they G themselves up to go and do something crazy, something wild, something Alan's never done before, steal a traffic cone for a brief period of time. They get very excited. Michael shouts, "Away the lads." They jump over the desk, immediately cut to the police, which is a brilliant edit. And I think the best thing about this is that they don't let Alan tell his version of events. The policeman recounts it back to him, which makes it even funnier.
That policeman as well, hats off, I think he plays that part perfectly. Yeah. That exchange is... You can see for the first time that when Alan kind of stares into the face of authority, he looks genuinely terrified because he's a complete coward in this series. And normally he'd be the one kind of leading the conversation, but this time he's being led.
So what we've determined is Alan is an ignorant coward. That is the summary.
Also, another sign of his pure fear in the face of being caught by the police is that... Think of all the times in the episodes up to now where Lynn has attempted to or offered to be his wife. And this is the first time where he immediately is like, yes, this is my wife.
That's a really, really good point. There's so many instances
We're 4 episodes in and someone's finally made a really good point.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
He obviously gives his address as Bill Carr, 10 King Road, Ipswich. I did look this up. There isn't a King Road, but there is a King Edward Road. So close enough. And the A47 Swatham Road, where he's pulled over, that does exist.
I also made that there is no 10 King Road Ipswich in Ipswich. But I did also note, I went onto Facebook and looked to see if there was a Bill Carr that lived in Ipswich. Ooh, there is.
Very good.
One Bill Carr that lives in Ipswich. I am slightly worried about his safety, though, because his last status update was the 25th of January 2013. And it said, "Once again, I've been a very naughty boy. Never seem to learn from my mistakes."
Oh, God. What's the next one? This sounds great.
No, that's the last one.
But what's he said previously?
Previously.
I
hope he's okay. So he doesn't have strong privacy settings.
His previous one was, "Fair play to Mother Duck. She always comes up trumps with a snow in predicted. Where I am over next few days, she turns up with 2 carrier bags full of chalk, sweets and pop.
Is
Keep
English
me going, good
first,
girl."
Is English what? Not his first language? Bill Carr there.
Bill Carr.
I believe it is.
I hope you're okay, Bill.
Please get in touch, Bill.
The interaction with Alan and the policeman as a line I absolutely love in this, which is, what, I've not said steal. Why have you said steal? Yeah. That is just so good.
Not said it. Yeah. Also, why does he get in the back of the car? Like, when they go to drive away, he doesn't
another
get in
the very
front,
good point.
He doesn't get in the front next to his, wife, so-called wife. He gets in the back.
I wonder if that's purely for visual purposes, so you can just see him probably.
Yeah.
I've got another fact I can add to this scene as well.
Also, I wonder if it is a bit that he's like, in the face of authority, he's become fully subservient. He's like a kid in the car again.
Now he's like a little mouse. Exactly. Fact I can add to this scene is the car alarm going off was genuine. That was not planned.
Nice.
So well done, Lynn. Thanks for that. So actually, I think if you look, you'll see that Lynn covers her face. That's because she starts corpsing, basically. She started laughing because she set the car alarm.
I thought that was some brilliant acting at that point as well from Felicity Montague. Like, agreed. The whole kind of being distraught about having been caught in this situation. Excellent.
But it's that combination of she's acting nervous, but she's also trying to not visibly laugh about what she's done to the car.
So then we're on to this episode's lap dancing scene where Alan's now got two cones protruding from his peephole Pringle.
Yes, and this is the first appearance of the peephole Pringle in the lap dance scenes, I believe.
Oh, right, okay. Tony Hares is present again. Lots of chat about, lots of wordplay about the having points on your license, clean and dirty licenses. which is sort of repeated a little bit to that style of joke at the end when he's back in Radio Norwich making puns with David Clifton, which we'll get onto shortly. And then he's back in the Travel Tavern talking to Lynn about the experience they've just been through and how he was almost infamous, but he wants to be famous.
No chance.
And then he has a pretty good slate back on Michael when he asks to have two eggs cooked in the morning.
Calls him a chicken.
Wants you to lay them. I think this is an episode where his attempts at fun and his comebacks are less offensive and less like bloody-minded than in other episodes. I think he's actually genuinely quite funny a little bit.
Why did Michael run off? Like, I know, obviously, Alan kind of gives the defence that, oh, he was in the war, I think he saw people being blown up, but...
Yeah. I think it might just be that.
Oh, yeah, I think scared. So, yeah.
Has he got previous?
Because I think he's got...
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Has he got previous?
Oh.
Obviously, he's got head problems. That's probably not...
Head problems.
Is that PC? Yeah, stick with it.
Yeah. But now I just wondered kind of like, what, he just runs over some fields to go back to, the Travel Tavern. Mm. Just it all seems a bit weird.
It's also quite funny the fact that he's left Alan to take all the flack. That makes it quite amusing as well.
Potential continuity issue here.
Oh, not again.
Just a minute ago, Alan was paranoid about being accused of being drink driving because he had to turn the engine turn the alarm off.
Technically
for
in charge of a motor vehicle.
Exactly. But then about 2 minutes later in the Travel Tavern, he's offering her a lift briefly before he rescinds the invitation.
Oh.
So not so scared of drink driving now.
Maybe the long arm of the law's not there, so he's being a bit... Audi.
Potentially.
Yep. Enjoy it.
So after that interaction with Michael, you then have Alan in the lift with Susan. It's another brilliantly awkward moment. And you have Susan, again, being quite flirtatious with him. She says, are you getting out here or are you going all the way with me?
All the way with Susan.
Oh, lovely Susan. But what I did notice is quite interesting about this bit. If you listen to the audience track, there's a bit of an audible groan, as in they sympathise with him a bit, or they feel sorry for the fact there maybe could be something between him and Susan, but he doesn't know what to do with it, so he just walks out and is a bit kind of horrified.
Groan
by
as
it.
In like a sigh, sort of.
Yeah. It's a bit like, oh,
so they're sympathising.
Maybe there is a woman that likes him and he's not a complete failure in every aspect. But I do think Susan is just doing it to amuse herself.
Yeah, I think perhaps the reason they put in a later episode that she's engaged is to make it absolutely clear that this is not genuine interest.
Yes, so people don't expect a kind of love story arc in the sitcom.
And I think that also this bit in the lift happens at this point because Alan is at his lowest ebb. He's just been, almost done by the police. And so perhaps in a lighter moment, he might have actually made something of it, but now it's especially
case that he's basically not. Basically, Susan's taken the piss and she's kicked him whilst he's down.
Yeah. A lot of, just thinking this, that lift, like, has a lift ever featured so heavily in a TV programme? A lot of the jokes of this series happen at a lift.
15 stories high. Oh, and if you've never seen that, it's brilliant.
There
watch
you go.
It.
Also, fun lift fact for fans of
lift
news. I'm eagerly awaiting this.
It's obviously not a real lift. There are men on either side of those doors putting in.
Yeah,
I
think in some scenes you can see it kind of wobbles a bit.
Yeah, one door goes quicker than the other, that sort of thing.
So we are now winding up back at Radio Norwich. This is my favourite Radio Norwich moment, I think, of the series.
I'd agree with that.
Because he absolutely straight up 100% ironclad owns Dave Clifford.
Yeah, he really does.
It's, pretty much, it's the only time that, well, I guess until you get to Alpha Papa when Dave Clifton is a weed of a man.
Yeah.
It's the only time that Alan is fully over him.
And actually, that's an interesting point. Look at Adam making all these interesting points this week.
It's like I've researched.
It's like he knows what he's doing. I guess that is the one victory for Alan in this episode. So at the end, he does get one over on Dave Clifton. That's about it, though.
Yeah. Oh, also, other bits in this, he, off the back of his encounter, he dedicates the police song to the police. That was nice, very respectful. I was curious how Dave Clifton found out about the cone.
Yeah,
story.
I got a note on that as well. How would
It wouldn't have made a newspaper, would it?
Not even in Norwich. It's kind of like failed ex-BBC
star.
But
who would have reported it?
Well, that's how the news works. They kind of find out these things and then they report it.
Presumably his show is a few hours after that happened.
Yeah, you've got me there. The internet wasn't...
Well, maybe Alan just told him what happened.
Perhaps, I guess.
Maybe.
But then, then obviously...
Also, you're in, like, you're between Linton and Norwich. It's like, is there that much else going on? So a radio...
Perhaps not.
A radio DJ being arrested.
Maybe it was in the Radio Norwich news.
Yeah, exactly.
Dave is winding him up until Alan basically snaps and then does that great thing that everyone loves whenever it happens in a comedy programme and just goes, oh, fuck off.
Now, I have in my notes about this, is that the first proper F word in this show?
Yes, I think it is. But it didn't stop the episode being rated 12. Every episode of this series is a 12 rating, apart from one, which is a PG.
I'm quite surprised by that, to be honest.
Second series, they ramp that rudeness right up. It's second series is a 15, more or less all the way through, but this is a 12 still.
Oh. Good information. Again, more research from Adam there.
This is the point where Dave Clifton first says dead air is a crime, which is something we've been referencing pretty much every episode.
Yeah.
Because there's so much dead air in this podcast.
That's right, though. Producer Jed will make that all go away.
But then Dave tries to chastise Alan for allowing swearing on his show. It's when Dave goes into his worst commercial radio voice. Alan points out all of the... him replacing the D's for T's. Is that... That's
no.
It. Oh, no, is that another episode?
Yeah.
Okay, but Dave is heavily doing it at this point again.
Yeah.
But it's 1 minute past seven. It's on Dave's show. Dave's responsible for the content. And then Alan signs off with a brilliant check the small print on your contract. Boom.
Also, he
mic
just,
drop.
And also, Fanny.
Oh, yeah, and Fanny, yeah. It's a quick Fanny in before the end. So does that bring us to the end of the episode?
Has I think it wraps it up nicely. Facts?
It does. You just have then the credits rolling over the CCTV footage of Alan and Michael
brilliant.
On the motorway, yeah. Which is hilarious.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
The music track from Go West, which is genuinely a brilliant album.
Have you ever worked at Pear Tree Productions wearing a Deacon Blue t-shirt by any chance?
I do have a soft spot genuinely for some of that music. Go West, very good. Deacon Blue, very good. Level 42, basically it's the music that my dad
so are you loving our Partridge Spotify playlist, Nick?
We have a playlist.
We sure do.
Tell me more.
Just it's on our Facebook.
Oh, okay,
find it.
Yeah,
be fine.
It's really good.
Cool. All right, we'll be back shortly with some correspondence and Cards Against Alanity.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay.
So thanks to all of you who've been in touch, either on Twitter at thepartridgepod, email thepartridgepod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thepartridgepod. We've got a little bit of correspondence to go through, so I'm going to pass over to my man, Tom Stab.
Thanks, Adam. Hi, everyone. So a few people.
Well, guys, that sounded too slick and professional. Don't do that again.
What was I thinking? So a couple of people have been in touch, RE theories about what's in Alan's drawer. Now, we discussed this previously on the show about what we thought might be in there. Might be some
dildos,
pornography, specifically ladyboy pornography. A few people have been in touch, including a chap called Dan Bradish, who got in touch with us on Facebook.
Hi Dan.
He seems to think that inside the drawer, and I think he references a radio show that's talked about this, that inside the drawer is fictional Dutch porn magazine Dikke Vrouwen op de Toiletten.
I'm sure that's the correct pronunciation.
Which translates as fat women on toilets.
So it's a niche publication. It's a specialist interest.
Import only.
And also, RE The Draw, Barbara Kirk has been in touch on Twitter, and she has a theory that Alan's gay and in denial, and in the draw is gay pornography. What do we think about that as a theory?
I don't think that's right.
I like them both. I've enjoyed listening, but it's still dildos or ladyboy porn.
Adam is championing dildos.
I think lady...
Other sex toys are available.
Yeah, I just think it's mags because the way he said, I don't know. But then there was always a very shocked reaction. You know what? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of what's in the drawer, no one really knows.
And that's why it's, exactly.
So theories, ideas, opinions, always welcome.
Keep them coming.
We read them all. And then the second person who's been in touch, we got an email from Louise Ramsden. Thank you for getting in touch. She actually told us about... that Alan Partridge was the biggest inspiration for her wedding. They signed their vows to Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear, playing in the background.
Presumably sung in the correct key.
You'd hope so. They exited the ceremony with It Started With a Kiss
again,
playing.
Presumably sung in the correct key.
And she walked down the aisle to The Spy Who Loved Me, which is amazing.
I like that she's also put in the email after she said she walked down the aisle to The Spy Who Loved Me, brackets, glang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang, close bracket.
Excellent. Well done, Louise. Thanks for getting in touch.
That's the sort of Partridge fan we want to hear.
Yeah, this is a marriage that will last.
And she said that the stag do was obviously full of lager, Baileys and gin and tonics.
Excellent.
Yep. Dream.
Excellent. Thanks for getting in touch, everyone. We appreciate it.
One other thing that several people have written in to correct us on is
I wonder what this could be.
The Long Stanton Spice Museum gate, where Nick, say hello.
Hello. I should fess up. So I just went on the website, and it's fair to say I didn't examine the detail of it because I just assumed it was real.
Would it be fair to say you didn't really read any of the words on the website?
Yeah. Did you read the quote on the front from Alan, 1997?
No.
Did you go to the location page and realise that there was no address there?
No.
So just to make this very clear, Long Stanton Spice Museum does not exist. We gave Nick one job and he failed.
I can only apologise to the literally millions of people probably milling around Long Stanton right now trying to find the elusive Spice Museum.
So remember, that's at Nick Alder if you've turned up to Long Stanton to find there is no Spice Museum.
Yeah. Sorry. Also, seems a good time to point out to everybody that we are not experts.
I think that's very clear.
Obvious.
Okay, let's move on to Cards Against Alanity then. So as everybody will know, I imagine who starts on episode 4, right? So everyone's a regular listener at this point. It's a Cards Against Humanity themed quiz with phrases and words from this series of Iron Man and Partridge. I'm going to read out an incomplete sentence from this episode. Everybody has to finish it with the cards they have in front of them as best they can. We show them to producer Jed. I read them out. He pings his bell for the winner. Nick inevitably wins, and then we all go home. So the incomplete sentence for this episode is, idea for a program entitled... ... So if you could all pass your chosen cards through to Jed to have a look.
Ooh, I've got two options. Both are pretty good.
There we go.
One of them's going to win, so... Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to have to hurry.
Can I have the sentence again?
It's idea for a program entitled... ... Okay.
Going to move on, Nick. Dead error is a crime.
So, Jed has had a chance to peruse all the answers.
He knows which one I've submitted now, though.
I will be needing him back. Yeah, because he's been so biased against you so far. Okay, so Jed's ready with the bell. Okay. Idea for a program entitled Sue Cook. Idea for a program entitled My Five Bedroom Bastard House. Idea for a program entitled A Hot Egg. There we go. It's the hot egg. Tom Stab's taking it. Oh, but the final one, idea for a title, mattress and a few traffic cones.
So that's Nick 3, Tom Stab 1.
Yep. 0-0 for us. More cards against Atlanity in episode 5. So that's it for episode 4 of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge podcast. Join us next week when we're going to be discussing episode 5, To Kill a Mocking Alan. Alan hosts an afternoon with Alan Partridge at the Travel Tavern, and it's also the appearance of everyone's favourite mentalist, Jed Maxwell. Yes. We will see you then. Say goodbye.
Bye.
This is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. To find out more about the records they release and the podcasts they make, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey tennis. Monkey tennis. Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis.
Not my face, I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express.
Monkey tennis. Monkey tennis.
I got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of the virgin.
Monkey tennis.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.